Sound good. Okay. You bet. I will call to order the regularly scheduled Board of Supervisors meeting on this Tuesday, 9/11/2012. Please ask the audience to join the board as we honor our nation with the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay. All righty. Thank you. Public comment number one. This is an opportunity for members of the audience to address the board regarding a topic on today's agenda. Is there anyone that would like to speak? Okay, seeing no one, then we'll move to consideration of minutes of 9/4/12.
Absolutely, but Wayne, before we do that, can we, in chair prerogative, and I don't mean to step on it, but can we take just a second just to remember what happened 11 years ago this morning?
Yes, I think we could. I thought about it, and I decided not to say anything. But
I apologize if I'm stepping on you.
No, go right ahead. You want to just comment, as we all know, I think the nation is well aware of the terrorist attack at 9/11 and the tragedy that spiraled in the aftermath where America began to engage its enemies abroad regarding the attack on our soil, and the number of lives that were lost is certainly worth reflecting and things of this nature. So I think it is extremely appropriate, and I would just ask if all would just take a moment of silence and remember of those who lost their lives and suffered on behalf of democracy in America. Thank you, and thank you for the suggestion.
Oh, I appreciate it, Wayne. And with that, I would move minutes of 9/4/12.
Okay, second. It's been moved and seconded. Approval of the minutes of 9/4/12. Here are no further comments. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Minutes are approved. Okay, moving on to item 5, consideration of personnel action. We've added one additional new hire to the sheriff's office. All others are good to go. I've reviewed those. Any questions or comments?
No, I'll move personnel action.
And I will second it. It's been moved and seconded. The approval of the personnel action as submitted. Here are no further comments. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Okay. Personnel is approved. On claims, this is a claims week, as is, and so the totals, as you say, is certainly what we like to see. So.
Yeah, we were going to be in big trouble if this was a big claims week, since I'm not willing to move or second those. But since it wasn't, I'll move the claims.
And I will second the approval of claims. Hearing no further comment, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Claims are approved. Are we going too fast for you, Shelley? Okay. All right. Okay, on the consent agenda, please add road closure number 1322. All other items on the consent agenda appears to...
I'll move the consent agenda.
It's been moved, and I will second the consent agenda. It's been moved and seconded. Is there any comments? Hearing none, roll call. Sanders?
Aye.
Clinton? Aye. Consent agenda is adopted. Okay. Okay. Then moving on to item 8, public hearing. This is the second consideration of Ordinance 216, rezoning lands located in Section 24 of Palestine Township under the ownership of Lance Carson from R1 Residential to AR Agricultural Residential. Planning and Development Director Leanne Harda.
Just to share with the board that we have not received any public inquiries since first consideration, so we recommend adoption on second consideration, set third and final for next Tuesday.
Okay. Any questions for Leanne, board? Okay, hearing none, I will open the public hearing and ask if there is anyone that would like to speak to this item or this topic. Okay, seeing no one, I will close the public hearing.
I'd move second consideration of Ordinance 216 and set third and final reading for next Tuesday, which I believe is the 18th.
Okay. And 18th. And I will second it. It's been moved and second the adoption of Ordinance Number 216 on second consideration and set third and final consideration for next Tuesday on the 18th. Hearing no further comments, roll call, Sanders.
Aye.
Clinton, aye. Ordinance 216 is adopted on second, approved on second, and third consideration will be in final consideration on the 18th. Thank you. Item 9, additional items. This is the discussion and consideration of revised Story County cellular phone policy after a seven-day review. We'll call on our HR director, Alyssa Wignall, to come forth. Okay.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I put out an email last Tuesday after you adopted the draft. I've only had just a couple questions. One concern that the policy is left open for interpretation as far as the amount of the allowance. They asked if there could be a table to determine. It's really difficult when you have 20-some departments. You have different responsibilities. We have law enforcement. We have on-call duties. I don't think there was a set table that we could put with this policy. So the only thing that has changed since the draft came through would be the statement that says the allowances may be in multiples of 10, not to exceed 40. The amount of the allowance shall be determined by the position, the on-call duties, and the amount of time an employee is required to work outside their normal office setting. I've had a few department heads contact me as far as, you know, trying to determine the amount of the stipend. They just need to have clear justification. You know, if they feel like their employee is out every day or if they're on call 3 to 4 times a week. I know some of our departments have an on-call phone that they just rotate, but there are others that, you know, small departments like information technology, they're kind of on call all the time since they don't have a lot of overlap as far as duties. So other than that, I pretty much said the same thing to all of them. We just need to look at the most cost-effective measure. If the allowance is the most cost-effective, great. And if actually providing them a county-owned cell phone. We also have the reimbursement. I have seen a few departments utilize the dollar per call reimbursement, you know, a few times out of the year the employee has off-site training or they're taking a group of individuals out on a conservation. The naturalists do some programs. They actually do it quite often, but in different circumstances, if it's just a couple times a year, that's probably the most cost-effective measure. Other than that, I really didn't have any questions or comments.
Me just comment. First of all, let me echo appreciation that I have, and I'm sure I speak on behalf of the board, and taking a look at this. This is, again, another area that we periodically take a look at and review, and we put policies in place for reasons, and when we first instituted the cell phone policies and so forth, I think it was always that the intent. It would be primarily used for business purposes and so forth, and we relied on department heads and elected officials to basically to provide the oversight in determining who was eligible and how it was used from that standpoint. And I think as we reviewed this and looked at this, I think it's just a reminder, again, of not only our due diligence, but what we consider to be proper use of taxpayer dollars as far as the actual use of a stipend for county business versus personal use and so forth. And when it's, in my opinion, if it's not a regular use and it only happens on a very infrequent circumstance, then we need to look for a different type of funding option, such as per call or something of that nature, rather than just an out-and-out monthly a stipend just for the use of that. I know I have a cell phone. I do not ask the county taxpayers to subsidize my cell phone, even though I use it considerably for county business, but I would have to say the majority of that is more personal. But I do ask for the data package there. So I do think that there is some in my opinion, legitimacy in why we're taking a look at this, and we just want to make sure that everybody is operating with the mindset that this is not intended to be a benefit for personal use. It is to be utilized for county business only. And I think your analysis and your discussion with me on this has been greatly appreciated. And I think that we're moving in the right direction. And I don't have a problem with departments coming to the board, justifying or explaining things. At the end of the day, we're going to either approve the claim or not approve the claim. And so I think this just gives us another area of us being able to fulfill our responsibility in the manner in which we were elected to do so. I thank you for reviewing this and for your ongoing communication.
Yeah, and Wayne, I think I'd just add, I think you're right on a lot of those points. I would just add, I didn't view this when you brought it to us as a big deal. I viewed it as an enhancement to our current policy and offering us the ability to have some consistency across, I think you said it was 75 right. county employees that are currently receiving this, and looking for those consistencies and making sure we're doing what we're supposed to do as a board. So with that, I will move the final approval of the revised cell phone policy.
And I will second that. Okay. It's been moved and seconded the approval of the revised cellular phone policy. Further discussion? Hearing none. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Okay. All right. Thank you. Okay, moving on to item two under consideration. It's consideration of Story County's Environmental Health Department to temporarily cover environmental health services for Boone County. Environmental Health Director, Margaret James.
Good morning. I'm not busy enough, so I'm looking for more work over in Boone County. The county sanitarian over there resigned, and so Boone County has asked Story County to cover sanitarian services over on the east, so to the east of the Des Moines River, and then Dallas County will cover the west side. And this contract would be for 60 days, and for the hourly amount of $40.55, I ask for that amount because that matches the Dallas County sanitarians, and then 50 cents per mile. I think it's a good idea to do this. It's the neighborly thing to do, and then Story County and Boone County have watersheds in common, so it's something that we are interested in protecting.
Go ahead.
I was just going to ask if the $40. I understand getting the $40.55 because that's what Dallas is charging. Does that cover our cost for the time that you and your staff are going to be putting in on Boone's behalf?
Yes. Oh. It will pay for the drive time over
right.
there also.
Yeah. And I think the proximity of the makes it a little bit different too. We're only talking roughly about 15 miles and so forth, but there is the mileage there. But again, he raises a good point. I think this is another example that we can show that through county's willingness to step up and collaborate and assist one another, we do so many joint cooperative things with our neighboring counties, and this is just another way that we can reach out and help until they are able to fill the position and so forth. So if at some time down the road there's a need to look at a different structure or us providing more long-term commitments, then I think we need to come back and revisit, you know, this agreement as is outlined here. Okay.
One other thing I wanted to add was the Board of Health recommends you accept this contract, and then also Jessica Reynolds has reviewed the contract and finds it acceptable and has checked with the insurance company, and they are fine also.
Okay. With that, any questions for Marvin? Okay.
I'd move approval of the cooperative agreement between Boone Health and Story County Health.
I will second it. It's been moved and seconded the approval of the cooperative agreement between Boone County and Story County with some assistance from the Environmental Health Department. Any further comments? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion carries. Thank you, Margaret.
Thank you.
You know, now I can tell Bill Lusher and the Boone County Board, this is another example that I've been telling them when we were just contemplating about annexing Eastern Boone County into more Story County as we grow. You know,
of course,
that was really a joke, you know, but we have a lot of fun when we get together and talk about things like that. Good. All righty. Item 3, discussion and consideration of motor grade quotations for the purchase of new motor grades for secondary roads. Okay, for Darren Moon, thank you. Is this one different than the one we got here? Okay, all right.
Okay, let me give a little bit of history first, because we originally went out for quotes back in April. The reason for that is we wanted to make sure we got that motor grader by winter time, because our operator is going to go from the steering wheel to joysticks, and we wanted to get used to those before winter, because we're going full bore in the winter. So usually it takes us 4 to 6 months to get a motor grader in, but when we got the quotes in, at least one of them, maybe both, had immediate availability for these. So talked to Lisa, and that was in July, and said, should we hold off a bit? And she's like, yeah, you better wait till after the first quarter at least. So that we went back to the two people at quote and told them we're going to re-quote completely, and that's what we did. So that's how we got to this point. In the meantime, between those two quotes, Caterpillar actually came out with a new model of motor grader, which really fit our needs well, and it actually lowered the cost. So you'll see that reflected in the Caterpillar quote here. They actually quoted us the old model and the new model.
Mm-hmm.
Give you some background on last year, what we did. If you recall, the Caterpillar came in at $17,000 more, but we went with the Caterpillar last year because the resale value of the Caterpillar is considerably higher. The controls for Caterpillar is one joystick. John Deere has these multiple joysticks that are, we've demoed them all, and their operators found them much more difficult to use. We also brought in both of those Cat models because the horsepower dropped about 20 horsepower in this 12M, which is on your list, and we actually took them both out and buried them in the mud, and operators could not tell the difference between the two, and we think it actually does have the same motor. They're about identical machines. It's just geared down so they don't use all the horsepower. So, but with that being said, you can see the results of the quotes. With the new model 12M Cat, it actually came in less than the John Deere model. So I do not see any reason not to go with the Caterpillar. So that would be my recommendation.
So do we have any of these, we have any of the old Cats in the fleet right now?
Yeah.
So the new difference of the new steering mechanism and so forth there. And
we have two of them already with the new steering mechanism, and the operators love them.
Okay.
Any way to know if this model is going to hold the value like the older Cat model held its value?
I'm sure it will. The horsepower is actually above what our horsepower and our quotes were for last year. So, and we adjust them each year to try to make sure Cat and John Deere can both bid. They're never quite equal, so it's hard to get an equal apples-apples comparison. But so we're not concerned about the horsepower or anything, and it's essentially the same model. As they also quoted that one to us, and it's about $20,000 higher to get the 140M, which is what we've bought in the past. But we feel the 12M is going to meet our needs just fine.
What I'm hearing, Darren, and just help me if I'm missing, between this Cat 12M and the John Deere 772, you prefer, apples to apples, you prefer the Cat, or our operators prefer the Cat, and it's coming in $4,000 cheaper?
Correct. John Deere does have about 20 more horsepower, but like I say, we had a Cat in here with the same horsepower, and we couldn't tell the difference between the lower Cat and the higher Cat, so it's going to meet our needs fine.
So, assuming that this is approved, what type of delivery timetable were you looking at?
I believe they had 12 of these in stock, so we'd get it fairly quickly. We'd tell them we aren't going to pay for it till after like October 1st.
That was the other question, payment would be. Okay.
So we'll make sure we don't get it for the next claims period, but it'll be the one after in October.
Okay. All right. Good. Any other questions? Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm just ready to move.
Sure.
Move acceptance of the bid for the Caterpillar 12M2.
Okay, we have.
Rose.
Okay, we have, and I will second. We have a motion for approval of the model 12M2 Caterpillar to move forward for the purchase of that for secondary roads as outlined. Is there further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion carries. Thank you, Darren. We'll move forward with that. Okay, is that the one you need? On this time sense. Okay. Then moving then on to item 4. Motor grade quote. Next item is the discussion consideration approval of the Squaw Creek Watershed Management Authority grant application. Planning and zoning, planning and development director Leanne Harder.
Okay. Good. Oh.
Name piles. What do you have before you on this agenda item relates directly to the Watershed Management Authority that's been formed for the Squaw Creek Watershed. I have a couple background slides for your benefit as well as that of the public, just where we started and what the intention of this grant application is. The Squaw Creek Watershed Management Authority was officially formed. We filed with the Secretary of State the end of June, actually June 28th. 11 of the 12 jurisdictions ultimately did agree to participate in that 28E agreement. Hamilton County was the one jurisdiction that chose not to participate. I'm a very competitive individual, so I'd like to point out that I believe we were the first Watershed Management Authority to file with Secretary of State in Iowa. So that means we were actually part of the first Watershed Management Authority in the history of Iowa. There's since June, several others, four others to be exact, have filed. It's the Indian Creek Watershed Management Authority, Turkey River, Catfish, and Upper Cedar River. These, if you see, are all in the eastern part of Iowa. We're actually the only one in central Iowa. This was done through a grant funding program through Iowa Economic Development Authority and Iowa DNR. It was in two phases, and this was part of phase one, where Story County received $25,000 plus or minus to hire a consultant. That phase is going to be completed this week. I'll be filing the final written narrative to the state, and then we'll close out that grant program. Now we're entering phase two, where there's an RFP that's out there right now, and this is what is on your agenda today. And those responses to the RFP, the applications are due September 24th. We did meet. Paul is the current chair of the Squaw Creek Watershed Management Authority. The authority met last week, did approve submittal of the grant application, but essentially is asking Story County to continue to act in the role of project management and facilitation to bring phase two to fruition as well. The proposed grant application does put forth tasks to accomplish a comprehensive watershed management plan with a planning horizon of 20 years. The application, as it currently stands, requests a little over $160,900 in grant funding. Of that, $147,500 would be for consulting services. $8,600 would be back to the Story County Planning and Development for our professional and planning services. $4,800 to cover supplies, and then in kind to that would be $14,460 on behalf of Story County to match that grant funding. That's not a requirement of the grant funding, but as a reality, if Story County continues to play a role in this, we will provide in kind as well. or else we could request the entire thing too. But I think it does bode well in the application to offer some in-kind contribution.
Tell me what our in-kind contribution is. Your staff time?
Staff time. Maybe some copying costs.
Is there anything that we're spending at this point? As I recall, when we approved our participation in this, we said we understand that it's going to take some of your staff time. We understand there may be some incidental costs, but no direct costs that Story County's writing checks for. Is that still where we are?
Yeah, it's, if you approve this today, it'll just basically be built into our work plan, and it just becomes part of our staff projects.
So, in essence, is it correct for me to read the $14,460 as in kind that we're already committing? And really, if we were to get this grant, we would be recouping $8,600 of what we've already committed. Okay.
Project timeline: the grant applications will be reviewed in September. We expect decision to be reached middle of October, execute contracts in November, December, and then if we are lucky to be funded, this project would see a horizon that would end in spring of 2014, so really almost an 18-month project. This is just a quick snapshot, and it's very difficult to read, but you start at the very top, at the beginning, with execution and contract, and then the various tasks on the outside of the circle, all the way to grant closeout. I just want to put this up there just to point out a couple elements that are very, really, I think, put our application aside from everyone else's. One, we are very fortunate that Lois Wright Morton, Dr. Lois Wright Morton from Iowa State, she's a professor in sociology, has agreed to help us from the onset, if we are funded, to help define and design the layout for stakeholder participation. Dr. Morton is one of the editors of, and actually authored a couple chapters in this, Pathways for Getting to Better Water Quality, the Citizen Effect. Will be the key to bring the watershed management plan beyond just static words on paper, actually bring some life to it, involving the stakeholders from the get-go. And she's agreed to be part of that initially. And then Gary Taylor with Iowa State Extension has agreed to be on the planning advisory, or the technical advisory committee, which is set up through the bylaws of the Squaw Creek Watershed Management Authority, to be part of that technical advisory committee, and he'll bring his expertise of the smart planning principles that Iowa adopted to the table. And that is a requirement of the grant funding, that we incorporate that into the overall comprehensive plan. And so I think that really, those two elements set us aside from the others. Neither have been approached yet, and we were time-wise enough eager to talk to both of them. I've now spoken to both of them, and both of them have agreed. And so I do want to point out that they are not specifically mentioned in the application that you all have seen for today, but I do need to revise it to mention them. Also, one other thing that will set us aside from everyone else is there's already a history of activity in the watershed with the Squaw Creek Watershed Coalition. In talking to Dr. Morton yesterday, she felt it very important that they play a key role, and especially in stakeholder participation. And so we'll have some conversations with them. But there's been a history of water quality monitoring in this watershed on their behalf, and a lot of involvement thus far. So where some of these other entities will be starting from scratch, we have a good sound running board to go from, a good foundation. Kind of getting to your question, Rick, too, on that funding, what is the role of Story County then? It's threefold, maybe a couple others as we go forward, but definitely fiscal agent responsibilities. That's what phase one was set up to be, and then we had to procure for services. We have to do the same thing with phase two if we are awarded. I think that design of procurement for services will look substantially different than it did this time. I think members of the authority will be involved rather than just Story County staff on that. But you know, that's to be determined. That I'll cross that bridge when we get funded. We'll, as a staff, be providing professional planning services, not just the grant management, but we'll be doing analyses and working really hand-in-hand with the consultant. But I don't see we'll be the lead project management. I think that will actually come from the authority and this technical or the planning team that's set up. But I expect that our department will be there at the table to assist with that. And you know,
be the liaison if needed. And that's why you see the $8,600 in addition to the in-kind to help recoup some of those costs. Your action today by the board is approving basically the grant application and commitment, therefore, to remain involved in this process. And you've said that with phase one, and so this is committing you to phase two and another 18 months. And then approval of the certification letter, which is a requirement of the RFP that the entity applying certify that you follow all the CDBG guidelines.
Leanne, if you could go back just for briefly, just in my mind, you mentioned that we were one of the first to apply for this grant application through the Watershed Management, but you indicated that there are several other areas of the state now that has come on board. Could you identify those areas again, please?
Yeah, I will. And it's up here on the slide. And, Wayne, thank you. That will help me out. I meant to share this with the board as well. When Phase 2 was released last fall, it was released with the, I guess, the direction or the belief system on those applying for Phase 1, that if you get Phase 1, it's limited to those people to apply for Phase 2. If you look up there, two, maybe three of the five entities that have officially filed a Watershed Management Authority are Phase 1 applicants. The Phase 2 is not limited to just Phase 1 applicants, which really, if there was a long list up here, I'd be really concerned about. But I think we're in a good position with our application. We're in a good position with our filings, bylaws, logos, Facebook presence, that we have a very strong proposal to offer. But again, as I said earlier, the majority of, well, not everyone else except for us, Squaw Creek Watershed Management Authority, is Eastern Iowa. There's, at this point, I know for, what's the name of, in Slater, and you've been approached, 4 Mile Creek.
4 Mile, yeah.
They're in the process of forming a Watershed Management Authority. They have yet to file. These are the latest as of this morning, according to Secretary of State. They may have formed a Watershed Management Authority through a 20E agreement, but the key is it has to be filed by September 24th, which is a grant deadline with Secretary of State, to be able to apply for Phase 2 funding. And we meet all those requirements.
Okay, so you've talked to us about what the next 18 months look like for the Squaw Creek Watershed Authority. If we get the grant, what would it look like if we don't get the grant? What is that group going to do?
That is a question the authority is asking itself right now, too. And the way it was left at the last meeting, they'll meet again in November to decide one way or another. Hopefully they decide we have a grant, we're going to go forward. If they don't have a grant, they may come to boards of supervisors, soil and water conservation districts, and this is the authority making the argument that this is important enough to all you as jurisdictions, we're asking funding, or we're doing this, or we're disbanding. The multitude of options, but at the last meeting, they started to broach that subject, but they realized they needed to get through this step first. And if not funded, then some really hard decisions will have to be made.
Leanne, part of, as I look at the proposal and the grant application and so forth, what is probably not necessarily clear and yet hasn't been defined is what is the actual scope, what will the scope of the management authority be as far as the watersheds are concerned, and if somehow they can identify what are the, you know, the things that they hope to be able to accomplish as a result of this, because the first thing that comes to the general public when you say watershed management, well, we're thinking about, well, will this have a direct impact on future flooding and how that will impact local jurisdictions and so forth. While water quality is another, you know, key factor as well, the nutrients and the various things that, you know, spill over into, you know, these sources of water. So I'm just wondering a little bit from a standpoint of, as this rolls out, how do we really communicate further what we hope that this management authority will be able to address for the general public concern? And then the second part of that question is on the surface, this appears, if we're successful in this, I would like to have you at least consider, you know, the Iowa Association of Counties for their fall schools and in the spring are constantly looking for topics and areas that will have statewide implications. And here's another example where I think this would be good for supervisors, particularly to hear a presentation in terms of, you know, what we're finding, what your commission is finding, how this could apply on a statewide basis and so forth. So that's just something to think about as we move forward, depending upon what role Story County will continue to play in the future.
Okay. To address your first part of the question, the 2080 agreement is very specific. It outlines seven goals or objectives of the Watershed Management Authority, and these are directly tied to the Iowa Code language that actually was developed to set up Watershed Management Authorities. To be redundant, the authority then incorporated those into the bylaws as well. And so it, not only are they in the 2080 agreement that you all signed, they're in the bylaws that formalize the way the authority operates. It's assess flood risks in the watershed, assess water quality, assess options for reducing flood risk and improving water quality, monitor federal flood risk planning and activities, educate residents of the watershed area regarding both water quality and flood risk, seek and allocate monies made available for purposes of water quality and flood mitigation, and make and enter into contracts and agreements as necessary. That's a very wide range of purpose. What the plan, if funded, would do would take that and through stakeholder participation, through an inventory of assets out there and identification of the concerns that are present, it would really narrow those down and have some very defined goals and then policy statements that go with those goals that then implementation measures are set forth that would be used to really achieve this purpose statement. You know, so it would take very broad down to very narrow and very specific steps and strategies.
Comments?
For me, the tougher conversation is going to be if funding doesn't come through. So, to me, approving making grant application is a no-brainer, so I'll move it.
Okay. And I will second it. It's been moved and seconded to move forward with the grant application request for the Squaw Creek Watershed Management Authority. Any further comments? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
I oppose. The motion carries. Thank you. And thank you, Leanne. You just like to stay busy, don't you? Okay. Then moving on to item 5, discussion and consideration of the Small Wind Innovation Zone. Okay.
Back. This is something that was brought to our attention as planning and development staff this spring at our county zoning officials conference in Marshalltown, and is something that we added to our work program to look at viability for Story County, and we're now at the stage where we've done our research and we want to bring it to you for some direction as to whether or not this is something that Story County should pursue. Just a couple background slides on what a small wind innovation zone is. It was created by the Iowa legislature in 2009. It then went through a series of rulemakings and amendments to applicable administrative code provisions through the Iowa Utilities Board, and actually draft model ordinances were brought forward in March of 2010. What it does, it basically allows any local political subdivision to create a small wind innovation zone to promote small wind production. We're not talking big wind farms. We're talking the smaller residential wind production or commercial wind production or wind production for commercial property. Just want to show political subdivisions are not just city or county. It does also include township, school district, community college, area education agency, institution that control the State Board of Regents, or any other local commission, association, or tribal council. So that political subdivision is very widely defined. To qualify for it, the local jurisdiction, so Story County or whatever political subdivision that may be, has to do a series of steps. One, adopt a model ordinance or something akin to a model ordinance, have that then approved by the Iowa Utilities Board. Also, establish an expedited approval process for these types of uses. And then the system owners themselves have to enter into a model interconnection agreement with all the utility providers. And the utility providers themselves have to agree to that, too. So it definitely is a 3-4-step process. And I'll come back to that at the end here. Really, the purpose, though, is to have these zones set in place so that those users have an expedited process. They don't have to spend a lot of time with the local permitting authority, nor do they have to spend a lot of time with the utility providers. In some cases, those small wind turbines are already, the engineering is approved, designed, and is basically a rubber stamp to get them up and going in these types of wind innovation zones. I may come up with an acronym on that one. The model ordinance does have several criteria for approval that's set forward. Actually, if you compare this to our current ordinance, pretty much one and the same. There are some things we don't have right now. That is, we don't require safety standards. We don't require engineering certification. Or we require engineering certification, not engineering approval. We don't require insurance, and we don't address abandonment, signage, or lighting specifically. We do that through other elements of our ordinance. Again, this the model ordinance, if we were to look at one, would apply in all zoning districts in Story County. Currently, we only allow the small wind energy in the A1 and the AR, I believe, maybe A2. But it's not across the board allowed. Step necessary is the political subdivision does have to apply to Iowa Utilities Board. And then that utility that is within one or more small wind innovation zones has a responsibility on their end to apply file an annual report every year on April 1st, which is the key to getting them engaged into this process. So far in Iowa, since this has gone into effect in 2010, three counties have successfully sought this designation through the Iowa Utilities Board. That's Floyd County, and actually all three have been this spring. Floyd County in March, Johnson in March, and then Lane County in May. The utilities in Story County, we have several, and I don't expect you to see other than the colors up on the right-hand side. That's why I've listed the utilities in Story County. But each of these would need to be contacted to see if they would be willing to enter into the agreement.
Does it have to be a majority of them?
No, it's a utility by utility basis.
Right. Okay.
If you adopt a small wind innovation zone, it'll be countywide, unincorporated wide, and that's, we'll discuss that. But it's then specific for utility. Steps that we would recommend following: contacting utilities, we'll do that in September, October this year. Bring forward amendments to land development regulations. We do, as I said, have some conformance with the model ordinance, but we would have to make some changes to our regulations. Now, what all three counties that have already done this have taken what their regulations are to the Iowa Utilities Board and said, we have elements of the model ordinance in place. We know that we may need to make some changes to this anyway as a result of the CPAT report and an audit of the small wind systems we knew had to be done. And so we've done that. We've already recognized some changes that we want to make as staff and proposed to the board and the commission. I don't necessarily think we need to take ours and ask the Iowa Utilities Board to look through ours and find elements. I think we can actually adopt the model ordinance and make ours better. So that will be coming forward to the commission in October. If you give us direction to do so, and then the board in November, and then file with the Iowa Utilities Board in December. I mean, it really is a quick process, and then we wait for the Iowa Utilities Board decision. The key will be that contact with the utilities. And that's it.
Now, the first question that I have is, why is this necessary? from your perspective?
It's not necessary for Story County, really. Although what we will get out of it is we can say we're small wind innovation zone. Really, the key is for the individuals in Story County, the expedited local approval process on both our end and then the utility provider end, so that they can get in there and get it up and not have to go through step A, step B, and we'll go to C, but you'll have to go back to A again if you don't have this right engineering certification in place. I mean, it just makes it a lot more simple. One benefit to Story County, though, you can go out there from a marketing standpoint and say, we're a small wind innovation zone. Not only do we have these large wind turbines and wind farms in Story County, but we also continue to encourage energy efficiency practices, and we've taken that a step beyond, and we've created this as an opportunity in Story County.
I get the marketing part, and I don't want to say, just walk me through. We've got our friend Nancy Miller here today. Let's say Nancy and Jim decided that they wanted to put up a smaller turbine to power their home and outbuildings. What would she have to go through today to get that done in Story County?
Today, I think she's zoned A1, so she would be able to do it. It's a permitted accessory use in our ordinance. She would have to, we'd have to make sure the size was between half acre and 1 acre, which it is, and we would apply all of our standards currently in the A1 zone district, so she'd have to get a zoning permit through our office. We would require an engineering certification, so a lot of the manufacturers have that as part of it, but if they didn't, she'd have to have an engineer license in the state of Iowa bring that forward. She would have to show compliance with the FAA regulations and then compliance with the National Electric Code, and then give us some evidence that she has informed the utility that she wants to have some power added to the grid or off the grid. I mean, depending on the amount of generation that's on that plate for that wind turbine. By having a set of wind turbines, these small wind turbines that we know are already basically rubber stamped, a lot of this back and forth getting information from the manufacturer engineer would not be necessary. And that's where we see some of the holdup that, okay, you've submitted this and this and this, but we need this engineering notification. It's a requirement of our ordinance, so that can cause some delays, and then getting that utility notification is where we've seen some delays come forward too, that the utility may or may not want to see someone go off the grid as a result of this, and that is where we could expedite things.
All right, so are you telling me that it would almost be a pre-approval for certain manufactured models, as long as the utility's on board,
then
somebody walks in and says, I want to do this, and we can say okay, rather than, okay, you got to provide us with all this information.
Yeah. We'll still have to make sure the setbacks are met and all that. But, you know, if someone has a acre lot size, you know, the height can go up to 80 feet, and they can meet the setbacks. And that's when we get in the residential zone district, so that would get probably more... The process may be a little bit more complicated, but right now we don't even allow them in residentially zoned districts.
Unintended consequences?
I don't know of any, and that's what we've asked. Ryan in our office has been working with Lane County as the newest county to go on board to see if there were any, and none that we could think of. Really, none that come to mind. And that just...
Well, Leanne, right now, I mean, the concept is intriguing. However, as I was looking, I guess I was looking for some type of document or outline here. When we talk about designating a zone or designating something, you know, I'm one of those type of learners that, you know, I can auditory is one thing, but I like to be able to visually sit down and kind of look at, you know, the kinds of things that this would do, what it would mean to a small business owner or homeowner who wished to basically be able to do this, and the streamlining process, which you just outlined. I think it would be helpful if that information is submitted in some kind of a way, and I think maybe the intent was to bring this forward, and I don't know that, so I'm asking, was it the intent is to bring this forward today for discussion to see if the board was in favor of us moving forward, and then we would have something more or less formalized in the statement such as what you gave, and then we would adopt that at a later time?
First and foremost, staff needs some direction. If you do want to have us look at the model ordinance and incorporating it into our land development regulations. And we're being selfish on our end and got on today's agenda because we need to start working on staff reports for the October meeting. And we're really trying hard not to hold a November meeting because of the election, and we can't meet in this room. And logistically, finding somewhere we can record is very difficult. So we're trying to get either October or December, and we have in tandem with this some changes that are going to the commission in October and coming to you in November on solar regulations. So it's a nice fit to bring solar in conjunction with small wind energy and get those through. So today I'm here to get some direction. Yes, staff, look at this as a possible change to the land development regulations and let that go through the process. And start reaching out to utility providers, see how they feel about this.
Yeah, that's the notes I have. Is right. You're asking us to be able to provide us with a draft ordinance where we're looking at making the changes we need to make to comply, and we're looking at contacting the utility providers to see if they have any interest. Because frankly, if the utility providers don't have any interest, it's a wasted exercise.
Other than we do need to amend our ordinance, we really do to make it more based on the CPAT report. Our audit did find that we needed to make it less exclusive and limiting it to those certain zone districts and make it a more broad application of small wind in Story County.
But we're not approving anything. We're just giving you direction to proceed.
Right.
And I would suggest that I'd like to learn more, so proceed.
And I will second that notion. So I think that is correct. And thank you again. I think this is an opportunity for us all to learn a lot, to not only look at our own ordinance and see where the amendment process comes in, but I do think that we know that there are individuals out here that are constantly taking a look at wind energy conversions and how this may apply. So from a countywide perspective, this is a good management tool and provide some clarity and consistency. I think, again, that's what we're trying to be able to do. So. With that, all in favor of the motion, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Thank you. Good. We look to hear more about this in the future. Okay. Agency reports. Okay. Darren, departmental report. Darren. Secondary roads.
Okay, I'll start out with a few items that were on the board agenda. First, there was a farm-to-market resolution for adding 600. Just a reminder what that was. There's a December farm-to-market review board meeting. That's for that application to add 600th Avenue to the farm-to-market system. And this go-around, we're not going to take anything off. We're going to try it without just adding 1 mile since it's just one small mile. They may just add it in. If it doesn't work, we'll try it the next, that's a 6-month cycle, I think, so we'll just try it the next time. There's final plans for the Milford 7 bridge on 170th Street. That's what we call the Gilbert gravel. That's the one that's a bit time sensitive, so if I can get you to both sign that after this meeting, I'll take those with me. And there's 3 more sets of final plans for smaller box culvert type projects, and I'll just let you hold on to those and have Paul sign those too. Maintenance side of things, we're finishing up. We had 40,000 tons of gravel produced, what we call our Boone pit, just on the other side of the county line into Boone County. We hauled all of that with our own crews. That's kind of a change from past practice. We're trying to be more efficient with what we do. Trying to add to our tandem trucks because that's what hauls this gravel. We have 4 now. We used to only have 3, so we're able to do a bit more and be more efficient with what we do. Marshall County gravel pit, they just started producing today. We have 30,000 tons of gravel started there. And I think we're going to produce another 40,000 at the Boone pit yet this fall. Some grading work. I put a few photos up here of some of our grading work that continues on. This dry year has given us a lot of time to get grading work done on our gravel roads. Just an example, this is south of Ames. We're doing work by districts now. And this is down in Cindy's district, south of Ames. We got, for some reason, her district had a lot of these concrete culverts that had head walls right at the edges of the road. And we're extending those out with metal pipes for safety and maintenance. Makes a lot better. This is an example of a lot of the ditch work we're trying to do. This is a before picture. You can see there's no ditch here. You could drive right off of that. So when we get heavy rains and stuff, there's no drainage where that flag is there. That's an actual crossroad culvert. You can't even see it. There's a hole it has to go down into to get through the road. But that's the type of thing we're trying to improve out there, the drainage systems. This is a picture after one of those same type of situations. This is South Elwood, which is University now, one of our most heavily traveled gravel roads, especially with farm. It's hard to keep it in rough condition because there is no drainage. And in Story County, we have a lot of our ditches that are drained by tile only. And so drainage is tough in the first place. But by bringing this road up, creating a ditch where there was no ditch over time it had filled in, really helps the drainage out there. And by bringing the road up, that helps snow blow over so we don't have as much snow drifting issues. But it's a good example of what we're doing out there. Another example, this is south of Colo, another one of those types of roads. You can see the old pipe here. This was under the road here. They didn't even know it was there. It was completely buried. So while they're creating the ditch, they hit that pipe. It was completely full of dirt and rusted out. So can see what we're doing. We're bringing the drainage back to where it's supposed to be. Another project our maintenance working on actually today again is it's one of our handful of scour critical bridges, and you can see why. It sits in a hole, this bridge does, so very rarely do we get to see what's going on under there. You can see that moss line. The water level always sits there, so we can never see under here. But with the dry conditions we've had, we can see what's going on. That the back wall isn't low enough. It keeps lowering, so it sucks that material under and can create holes on the edges of the bridges, which can create a dangerous situation. So we're pushing a bunch of riprap, trying to fill up this hole and put the riprap and engineering fabric in there to keep the material from sucking through there. But this is extremely wet, and with our new skid loader, we're able to push it in. But it's taking some time with as wet as it is, so we don't bury it in there and can't get it back out. Wanted to comment that our Collins Mortar Grader District operator has been out on medical leave, be about a 2-month deal. So in case you get any calls there, we are, when other operators are free, we're sending them down there to keep up that district. So we do have a backup plan, and we're keeping up with it, but I just wanted to be aware of that. Upcoming construction work, we have two projects. First I want to finish this one. This one's already underway. This is a Hardin County line bridge. It's a cooperative project between Hardin County and Story County. They've already got the two abutments and the pier stems poured here, and they're in the process of forming the deck, and hopefully get that deck poured before winter rolls around so we don't have to do cold weather protection on that, but it's going good. And a couple projects yet to start. We actually had pre-construction meeting this morning on both of them with the contractor. One is Shipley Road overlay and pipe removal out there, replacement. That should start probably later next week, and we'll work with the landowners to let them know there will be some road closures in the area, and we'll notify the school bus. The other project is the Vetter paving of that quarter mile, and that is expected to start possibly in that 2-week period too, but I will keep the Vetter facility informed on that, because I don't know, they're getting close to opening. But
you know when they're planning on opening?
Well, the water facility was at our meeting, and they commented they don't have immediate plans to get that out there, and I don't think they can open until they have that water protection in place. So they're thinking sometime in October they'll get that done for them. So I think Vedder kind of wanted to get done by the end of September and open, but I don't think that's really going to happen at this point. And it shouldn't take our project long once they move in. I'm hoping a week or two and they'll wrap that up quickly. But I think the water line's what's going to hold them up.
And are we going to wait until we know for sure that they're moving in before we go ahead and pave that road?
No, the clock's ticking on the contractor, according to our contract with them already, so working day-wise. So that they're going to work it in and get it in those working days, or they're going to have damages to pay. So the water line really doesn't affect our construction. Some project designs we're working on. I wanted to point out just one of them actually incorporates two on North Dakota. Bit difficult to see. Shelly, can you turn off that light in the back? Might be a little easier to see. Thank you. Two projects here. We have this bridge here. We're working on a bridge replacement plans for right now, and we've already talked about this curve on that. This is the last curve to the north on North Dakota before you hit the straightaway. The straightaway is what we're working on the plans for. That pavement, there's no shoulder, so the pavement's breaking off, and we need to do something with that fairly soon. But we looked at the possibility of improving that curve a little bit while we did it, but it would encroach on this property. Just to give you a little bit of accident history on that curve itself, we have had 13 accidents on that curve in the past 10 years. That's not good. It's not horrible. But the good side of that is these are all minor accidents. There was no major injury or fatalities on this curve. That's what it takes to get safety funds, major accidents and fatalities. So safety funds really aren't available to do any improvements here. But just to give you a feel of the kind of accidents we're getting there. And they were all in dry. Eight of them were in dry conditions, and four of them were in wet conditions, and none of them were in icy conditions. So what that tells you is people are just driving too fast around there. And when it's icy, they're paying more attention and being careful. But the speed limit's only 35 through there, and the curve's signed at 25. We're going to look at maybe some sign improvements to warn people more. They need to follow the posted speeds out there. That may help. But we did look at some other options on what rerouting the road would do. This is one we've looked at in the past, trying to head off this direction in between these two buildings. And the two lines are the minimum amount of right-of-way we'd need to get the road in, and it'd probably be a little bit more than that. Just wouldn't be able to squeeze it in there without taking one of these two buildings out. And there's a pretty quick grade change here, too, that might be even more difficult to deal with. But the other option was if this road was built on the section line, like most roads are in Story County originally, the reason they went this way is to follow the ridge line on the top to avoid the bridge structures in here. Kind of put a preliminary cost estimate together on what it would take to do that. Right here is our problem area. We're crossing this stream essentially three times, and these two are close enough together where you'd have to span the whole thing with probably 300 or 400 foot bridge and then another structure here. You're probably getting close to $3 million range to do that rerouting, and you're maybe getting into some environmental issues through there too. And there is a brand new house right back here. Their lane is extremely long. But the old house is shown, but there's a new house here. We're getting pretty close to some probably historic barn structures there, but that's the only other route we can think of. And
go back to your first, the curve route where you were talking about rerouting that
over here.
Through. Those are what, farm buildings currently right now, outbuildings of some sort, not necessarily homes?
The home is real close to it on this one. The home is right here. but the home on the other one is way up here, way so up it wouldn't there. Be as close to the one up
so
there.
So just think about it in terms of process. If you felt that this was the most expedient and cost-effective way to resolve this issue, what's the process? You try to see if the landowner is a willing participant in terms of relocating that road close by, or...
Yeah, and we, like you said, we've kind of done that already with this curve, and we got a good feeling that that one probably isn't going to be purchased without condemnation.
Right, right, and that was the other question that come into play. We have to look at it from the standpoint of the public good and whether a condemnation process would have to come into play there.
And I think this property would have actually more impact on this property than this one, so that one might not be easy go either, but we don't know.
What is the new bridge over Onion Creek that you're currently working on? What is that going to cost us?
That will be around $300,000, I believe. And even if you did this route, you probably still would have to do something with that to get these people access, unless you cut it off here and made them go all the way around to their house. And I don't know if they'd like that, because I would imagine most of them head to Ames most of the time.
So we're talking approximately how many residents impacted here?
Oh, I don't have a number offhand. I would guess about 10.
About 10.
Here.
Mm-hmm.
And there's more. There's more further. What down would be east, right? The way we're looking at this, north is to the right.
Yes, correct.
And isn't there a house right there where coming from the north when you curve back to the east? Isn't there a house right there on the outside of that curve too?
Oh yeah, that's what I was going to mention last. Is there a house right here that would
have to go?
Have to go unless we tried to get around it, but then we'd get into this brand new house, which our aerial photos haven't picked up yet, so I don't have a good location on it.
So we've got a bad road with bad curves that fortunately we haven't had any serious accidents on. We've had 13 accidents, but nothing overly serious.
Yep.
We've got no good options to improve that curve. Either cost or unwillingness of landowners to give up some of their property to work on the curve or whatever. We've got no real good options. So I mean, where do we go from here? It sounds to me like we're just status quo and we keep going.
Yeah, in the short term, I think we've got to do something with this stretch of pavement here. And while we do that, we want to add some shoulders onto it. So I think we're going to move forward with that and maybe try to do a little bit of improvement here where we can maybe pave the shoulder or something because tires drop off there a lot without having to buy any right-of-way through there, and then continue on replacing this because I think that's going to have to be replaced either way too. And this bridge has got steel beams and it's load posted, and we're having issues in the winter. We can't get our salt sand truck over that anymore, so... That's a pretty high priority for us, too. But I think for now we'll continue with design on both of these projects, and maybe down the road we can look at improvements.
And you said something about increased signage.
Yeah.
Notifying. What's our speed limit through there right now?
It's 35, and the one thing this landowner pointed out, it's a bit confusing. You're coming up here, and there's an advisory, which is the yellow sign. It says 25-mile-an-hour curve. But then after that, it says 35-mile-an-hour road. I can see how that's a bit confusing. So we're going to move that 35 back a little further. So the 35, and then you hit the 25 advisory after that, and maybe put some of those red flags on some of the 25 to make sure they know they really need to slow down around that curve. Just as a reference point, this had 13 accidents. The stretch of Cameron School Road from North Dakota to GW Carver, that had 52 accidents in the same amount of time, and that's a straightaway. That's a problem road for us. Couple quick updates on drainage district work. You approved the work on drainage district 10 with Jensen Construction is going to come in hopefully this fall. They haven't given me a start date yet, but that's on the short list of things to do. And Scott Wall's working with Boone County to try to set up a hearing for the Boone Story 3 hearing. For we want to get some input on that first before we spend any money on engineering coming in on that. So if Boone County is okay with that, I think they're looking at a November time frame to set a hearing for that to get some input. Just as an FYI, this is more of a conservation issue, but Mike Cox and Joe Quaker are working on, we had an incident in the road right away with their sprayer, B&W. He flipped over the four-wheeler that he was using to spray it, and I think he broke his back. A pretty serious accident. And so Joe and Mike are working to make sure they had proper insurance and all that, but I just wanted to make you aware that happened last week.
I know Alyssa's involved in that as well.
Safety meeting. We're having our departmental safety meeting that we have a couple times a year, September 21st, next Friday. And as a part of that, we're going to have our fall, what we call our chili feed. We get together for lunch with all the employees, so I would invite any of the board to stop by that if you
would. And I noticed to Brian Anderson, also our insurance carrier, he might want to sit in on that. What time is that going to be?
We haven't got the actual time set
okay,
yet.
Okay, let me know.
It'll definitely go through lunch time for the...
Right, let me know. I'll try to see if... On the 22nd?
21st, Friday.
I know I will be. I'll be in state.
Lastly, I want to comment on CERPA Thursday. I have an exec board meeting in Des Moines after that, so if you probably won't be able to ride together if you're able to go.
Oh, gosh, this Thursday. Yeah, let me double-check that. I thought I had something.
And at that meeting, on the agenda for CERPA is to discuss the new federal transportation program, the bill that was passed, and they've come out with some additional details on the road and bridge funding, but I haven't seen anything more yet on the enhancement side of things, so I don't expect to learn anything more, but I'm going to ask for more information from CERPA if they can investigate it further on how that might affect our country club bike.
That's the 13th, right?
Yeah, I think getting as much information on that as possible is key.
That, do you know if the CERPA meeting agenda is pretty short on that? I did have an 11:30 meeting back here in Ames.
It was about an average agenda.
Okay. All right. I'll try to drive and go down, and then if I need to leave to get back for the service, I will.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Darren.
Good. Okay. Great.
Posted on the farm to market on
right.
600. Thanks.
Okay, moving on, liaison assignments, committee updates, anything?
Yeah, two real quick things. Met with Mark Jackson and Dan Colhane yesterday just to talk through some more of the CPAT report and try to get us ready, Wayne, when we start
right.
talking about budgets this year, of where we're headed on some of those recommendations, trying to get input from the Story County Economic Development Group. And additionally, yesterday had meetings with Jessica Reynolds and we included Bob Johnston on the phone discussing TIF. It is our intention to bring you a draft copy of policies, bring to the board a draft copy of TIF policies next Tuesday.
Okay.
And if, in fact, we move ahead with that and it is approved by the board, we'll become the first county to have any hard and fast policies on how we utilize TIF and where we're going to go from there. So just be aware and be expecting more on those two things.
All right, great. Unfortunately, I was had to go out of county for another meeting, so I didn't have my liaison of county meeting. So I'll mention that a little bit in the announcements from the supervisor. I'll update you on Monday's meeting. Okay. Other reports. Item 14, again, public forum comments not on the agenda. Anyone wants to bring something to the board's attention for future consideration? Come on down, Nancy. You do it. Oh, you bet.
That was a good phone call yesterday.
Oh, did you like that?
I did, absolutely. Yeah. I was going to call you today if you didn't show up at the meeting.
I told you I'd show up.
Well, yeah, I was hoping.
Hey, I do what I say I'm going to do.
All right, take it away.
Okay. I'd like to report that the movement of the speed signs on 600 has, it appears, had a very positive effect. In other words, in terms of people being able to actually see the thing. This year, because of the drought, the low production, I don't think that the traffic has been as typical as we've seen for many, many years when we've had great production. Okay, and unfortunately, God doesn't issue us a memo regarding what next year's production is going to be. I wish he did. Farmers wish he did, too. But at any rate, the DuPont-Dinesco operation was originally scheduled to be in operation next year, and considering the volume of movement there on their land and how quickly that structure can be accomplished, I would expect to see it being accomplished in 2013. Also an indicator is that they're already stockpiling materials to utilize in that facility. In fact, last night at the P&Z Commission, we worked on the wording of a part of the conditional zoning commission things. Yeah, conditional use permits, in such that they will not have to every time, for whether it's 40, 50, 60 locations that they're stockpiling this, that they will have to come before the board. In other words, that they can group them. And we worked on the language so that it would be clear that this is for business purposes, and what that will do is not impede our farming community, those who are in the farming operation, because we all know that they stockpile things on their land, but then they're utilizing it typically for themselves, so it would not impede that. Obviously, because the DuPont facility is a reality, I would hope that there is movement early next year in terms of paving 600. It's going to be hugely traveled, not with just with farm equipment, but also moving the stockpiles of the materials to DuPont. And we are going to see a dramatic increase in traffic. So I would implore you to, as the plan is produced, I can't remember when the deadline for that is to be submitted to the DOT, but I would certainly ask you to very seriously consider that. And as the budget meetings start happening here, and I think that starts happening pretty gosh darn quick, if I remember correctly.
Well, and for me, Nancy, and this is no big secret to you, while it doesn't create any new dollars, it does, in fact, give us access to existing dollars depending on the farm-to-market evaluation of that road and how all that comes down. And I believe Darren said that was going to happen in late November, early December. To me, that will factor into a lot of those conversations as well.
Have a big factor on how quickly we could expedite, you know, that issue. Thank you. Thank you for the update. Okay, anyone else? Okay. Announcements from the supervisors.
Pass.
Rick. I want to update you a little bit on HERTA, Heart of Our Regional Transit Agency. Couple things. There's been a lot of movement amongst the region regarding transit and transportation. A lot of the providers are finding it really challenging to continue to operate transportation for their agencies without occurring a loss. On Monday, I went before the Board of Supervisors in Marion County. One other member of our executive board, along with our executive director, and we talked about providing direct service to Marion County, very similar to what has taken place in Newton and in Story County, using those as a model. The reason for that is Christian Opportunity Center, COC, has indicated to us that they desire to get out of the providing transportation as of November 1st. And so we had a very short window of opportunity. Marion County, unlike the rest of the counties, have a greater stake in providing that. They actually have two providers within the county, one out of Pella and the other countywide. And we wanted the Board of Supervisors to be aware that that's not the best option for us to move forward. If somehow either the provider who is providing service in Pella would be willing to consider the countywide operation, or that HRDA would take over direct operation. And so part of the discussion centered around, again, with the facilities that are currently in place right now be usable when the changeover occurs, would we be able to hire the same drivers and work there? And that appears to be a given, a positive go-ahead. No action was actually taken at this time, but we will be meeting with RACAP, which is the provider, the other provider, who exclusively provide service in Pella, as to whether or not they have an interest in an RFP for the countywide service. We've heard indications they're not interested, so therefore we are looking at what it would take for us to operate. What was interesting in that discussion, and it was an educational factor for me, is that the county always felt, Marion County thought that they were obligated to provide transportation. And it was made clear that HRDA, through the contract with the state, the DOT, is the regional provider. It is the obligation of HRDA to actually provide transportation in each of the 28 E member counties in our region. And however the county contributes to that was quite interesting. So that's going to be an area that we're going to be looking at to see how we move forward. But currently right now, we know between now and May 31st, or no, June, up to July 1, June 30th, we will probably be taking over a similar operation in Marion County. Now, back to Story County. The transition in Story County has been without hiccups. We've had some challenges, as you well know. First of all, the move into the new facility, the facility for our buses is going well. We've entered into a contractual agreement with Friedrichs to store the buses in the old barn that was once owned by Froning and Depe for grain storage. That is working fine. The new office dispatch area is going greatly. We've had some issues with the manifest, with the scheduling and the routing of clients. And as of Friday, there was a decision was made to change the supervisor who is heading that operation. And so Mike Nadler, who was originally working at Heartland, will take over as the interim superintendent or supervisor for the transit operation here in Story County. And with a series of events that recently came to light, we felt that it was important to make that change. And I met at 6:15 on Monday with the drivers, a couple of the drivers here, and they were all supportive of the change that took place and willing to work cooperatively for the betterment of our clients. So I will keep you updated in terms of how this is going. We do know that there were a few agencies that were frustrated with the way clients were either not picked up on time or dropped off, etc. So we had to do a little damage control, and that is being addressed. I'm assured that everybody is now on board to deal with this. But one thing that I tried to convey to our drivers is that the only way that we can address an issue is we know that there's a problem. And if things surface and they don't tell us or they contact our executive director, you know, it could simmer, and we certainly didn't want that to happen. So I think the situation in Story County should improve. I have told them to keep me closely monitored as to what's taking place. So if for some reason I'm not here, I mention you and Paul just so that we as a county certainly is involved with that. So I think this is going to turn out to be a good situation. Julia is planning to come to us later to tell us about the increased ridership and the marketing, which I think has shown real positive results. So, but I just want to keep you in the loop with that. So,
thank you.
Okay. With that, the next item is adjournment.
Move adjournment.
And I will second that. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Meeting adjourned. Done.